It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Morning, Phil Goff, how are you?
I'm good, apart from the Harbour Bridge being closed this morning, just when I was on the motorway.
And, oh, no.
I was due to be in at work at, I think, according to my GPS, 6.53. I finally got in at 7.30. So I had to go via, coming from South Auckland, I ended up going into town via Western Springs, which was quite unexpected. But the good news is the bridge is opening.
It's
opened again, and I can see the cars going across. Not quite sure how many lanes, but... We don't have the squalls just at the moment, so hopefully everything will get back to close to normal.
So that is very good to hear that the bridge is reopening. We are going to talk a little bit about some historic stuff to do with the bridge this morning, though, because RNZ's been reporting yesterday that there has been land contamination due to works done on the bridge, and that the Transport Authority's known about it since about 2010. And we're talking things like lead poisoning and zinc poisoning in the soil around the bridge area. How has this kind of happened? How has this not been brought into the public before now? This is over a decade.
This is historic, and I was alarmed when I heard the Radio New Zealand report yesterday, so I immediately got onto the Chief Executive of Auckland Council and said, tell me what happened, why is there apparently contamination and people weren't told. And they provided a report for me at 7.45 last night. And I'll just read the relevant sections. Auckland Council had a comprehensive independent human health risk assessment carried out for Stokes Point in 2011, which found no ongoing public health risk. Because there was no risk, there was no need to notify anyone or record anything on the property files. The areas of council land that have been found to be contaminated are small. There's no data to indicate contamination anywhere else in the general area. They did two health risk assessments, one by in August 2011 by Tonkin and Taylor, one in August 2013 by a group called GDH. And that their summary there says these assessments do not support that adjacent residential properties are or are likely to have any land to have land containing hazardous contaminants. So this contrasts with what I've seen from the Radio New Zealand reports. There's obviously a disjuncture there somewhere. So I'm going to ask Council to go back and to work through what is alleged so that we can be confident that this wasn't the case of people having very contaminated land that they weren't told about. It's a serious allegation. The Council, working from their records, say that's not the case. But I want to be absolutely sure about that, so I want them to look through what has been alleged so that they can confidently refute that there is not a problem of the nature that Radio New Zealand carried.
So even if there isn't an issue, there is definitely an issue in communication going on here, and that is perhaps something that also needs to be addressed, because going forward, if there is another situation like this, you'd hope that there'd maybe be a bit more of a front-facing conversation rather than a retrospective one. Do you think that there is a need for that happening right now?
Yeah, well, look, it's kind of... I find it a little bit odd that as a former employee, environmental manager of New Zealand Transport Agency, which, you know, 10 years after the event has said, look, they ignored what I said and there was clear contamination and nobody was told. The difficulty is reaching back in time to find out what actually happened. But if I was living near the bridge and I was told that, hey, my land is badly contaminated by lead and Perine, I think it's called, at 30 times the permitted levels, I'd be worried about that. And they kind of will need some reassurance as to what the actual situation is. And clearly, the two stories don't match up. And, you know, it's NZTA on one hand, the New Zealand Transport Agency on one hand, Council on the other. And it's kind of unsatisfactory that we have two separate stories that say contradictory things. People will still feel uncertain and they need some reassurance, in my view.
And what's the timeline on that? What are you hoping to be able to get back to people? When are you hoping to get back?
I got council officials to go through the track records way back to 2011, 2013, and what I read out to you is what they've come back with. So they seem confident that there wasn't a problem. They also say that they consent NZTA for the work on the maintenance of the bridge, and the most recent report covering 2019 indicated that maintenance works were completed within the environmental management plan and consent conditions, and that all environmental monitoring results were compliant with the contaminant thresholds. So they're saying, hey, look, this is being done properly. And the former employee of the New Zealand Transport Agency said it wasn't done properly and people should have been told. I'm now faced with two opposite stories, and I'm still keen to find out where the truth lies.
Well, moving on to another environmental situation happening in Tamaki Makaurau, the Dome Valley landfill has been quite contentious since it was proposed, and now the council is recommending that its proposal be declined. Now, can you tell us how it's got to this point where the council is now recommending this? Because there has been quite a bit of public conversation around it, and now we're seeing the council step in. What's been the trajectory to get to here?
Yeah, well, how it works is this. The council has to receive any application for something such as a landfill, and having received the application, it then passes it on to an independent hearing panel made up of five independent hearing commissioners who in the first instance make the decision, and then their decision is appealable by either side to the Environment Court. But council isn't finished with that. Council doesn't involve itself politically in it, but it does provide technical reports to the independent hearing panel. And there were two reports, one from the on the application for the resource consent, and that technical report said that the application for the landfill, as put out by Waste Management New Zealand Limited, should be declined because there are significant ecological effects that have not been adequately avoided or mitigated. They also have to deal with a plan change in a different section of council, and in what, you know, on the surface looks like an opposite thing, they say the area could be suitable for a landfill. But if you reconcile those two views, is the area could be suitable for a landfill, but this particular proposal does not satisfactorily meet ecological concerns. So both of those technical reports from planning officers will go up to the independent hearing commissioners. They meet in November, I think, at the Warkworth Town Hall, and they, in the end, independently make a decision as to whether the application should be approved, or if not approved, could be approved if changes were made to stop the ecological effects that the council planners have drawn attention to.
So the concerns that the public have been raising may still potentially exist, even if this kind of particular version of a landfill is declined. If there is still a landfill there, that does seem to be something that people will be concerned about. Will there be an opportunity for feedback from the public?
Well, the public will be making submissions to the independent hearing commissioners. There'll be submissions from whoever wants to make submissions to them. That's the democratic part of how people can have their voice heard on a particular application for a development. In the same way as any development that that is contentious has this process in it. Look, nobody wants a landfill. I wouldn't want one next to me. Ultimately, we want to phase out landfill, and we're trying to up our levels of recycling so landfills aren't necessary. But at the moment, they are necessary, and we have to have a landfill somewhere. So the role of the independent hearing commissioners is to look at this particular application and say, is this satisfactory from the point of view of whether it would cause a damage that is not acceptable, and that might mean leachate into rivers, into the Hotio River, or it might be, you know, smell or whatever. The standards are much higher today than would traditionally have been the case with landfill. You know, when you think of the history of our city, and we used to dump stuff on the side of the harbour. The side of the Manukau Harbour, in particular, was just a series of rubbish dumps. And all of those are now, you know, they are potentially areas where you can leach into the sea, and we've had to, you know, councils had to do over the years remediation on that to prevent it. Mm. But today you wouldn't even think of putting a landfill on the edge of the harbour. So it's got to be done properly, and the independent hearing panel, and then if it goes on appeal, the Environment Court will ensure that the highest environmental standards are met if it goes ahead at all.
And just to round us off on another environmentally related topic this morning, I did want to touch base back on the Canal Road tree situation in Avondale that's been unfolding for quite some time now. I think it's reaching over 80 days that there's been a protest at the site against the chopping down of the mature native trees that are there. And there's been a lot of calls for you, Phil, to come down to the site, and also for council to take responsibility for them. Now, I know that there is a difficulty over it being private land, but has there been any more conversation between council and the people at the site at the moment?
Yeah. We had the protest group in to speak to council last Thursday at the governing body. So we gave them the chance to put their case. And we're following up on one of their suggestions. Look, these are beautiful trees. I know the site quite well. I don't need to go there to visit because I'm very familiar with it. And they are beautiful trees. And it's a shame that both the current owner and the potential owner, the developer, are insisting that the trees be cut down. Now, because it's private property, they have that right to do it, and council has no legal means, because of changes under the Resource Management Act, to stop that happening. I did explore personally through Cabinet with whether Kāinga Ora, the government housing agency, would be prepared to swap another area of land that we had in Canal Road, which is a reserve but a fairly bare and ordinary piece of land, maybe suitable mm-hmm. for housing, but you know, the facilities on it are pretty basic, with this, so that we could do a, you know, Kāinga Ora could buy it off the current owner, the area with the trees, then swap it with us for the Canal Road Reserve. Unfortunately, they weren't keen to do that. So that was the other avenue that I explored. Now the protest group is saying, look, we have another developer that might be prepared to buy it and would reach some deal with council, and we are exploring that to see if it has any possibilities. But, you know, where we're stuck is we can't possibly... This land's, I'm told by the protest group, is $4.8 million. I cannot tell council to buy every piece of land with a tree that's in danger of being cut down, which is a significant tree, to buy that land because it's not financially viable for council to do so.
This seems to get back to the issue, though, of as you mentioned, the Resource Management Act having changed. But, you know, this is pointing to a bigger issue that we've got of these mature trees in Auckland that are at risk now because of this change.
Yeah.
What can be done to prevent issues like this?
I've been in touch with the Minister for the Environment over the last year saying when they're redoing the Resource Management Act, we want a provision there that would enable trees defined as significant to have some protection on a blanket basis. So, you know, the challenge is to define what significant means, but if you've got 100-year-old trees, including some relatively rare species of trees growing in an urban area that are in good shape and are great specimens of native trees, you would say they would be significant trees, and then the owner wouldn't think of selling it for development, or it'd sell it for development if you could develop around the trees rather than cutting them down. I don't think it's satisfactory in the 21st century that we just do a slash and burn and a whole lot of really good native trees are being wiped out. You know, that's not satisfactory from my point of view, and I would want a change in the law that would enable some protection of those trees. Not as far as the law used to go, where, you know, you had to get permission to cut off a branch if it was poking in your kitchen window. You need to do it sensibly, but the most significant and the oldest and best species of those trees need to be preserved, and it's a shame that the law does not allow for that to happen at the present time.
Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Mayor Phil Gough. We always appreciate having you on the show. We'll talk to you again next week.
Okay, Rachel, and let's hope the wind stays down and the bridge keeps moving. I'm
yes.
glancing out there now. The rain's come back over, so hopefully it is still moving. But they did reopen it about 20 minutes ago.
All right. Well, thank you very much. We'll talk to you again next Tuesday.
Thanks,
bye.
Rachel. Cheers. Bye.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Thank you.